Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, the founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Good evening, everyone. This is Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler, and you're listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. I'm here with my co-host, Rebecca Stevens. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Great to see you, but I guess it's great to hear you, see you over the radio, if you will.
Yep, absolutely. It's always great to be here. We are here generally on the second and fourth Monday nights of the month, but tonight, this month in September, we are here on the third and the fifth Mondays of the month, given the Labor Day holiday. So we're just really excited to be here twice a month, as we always are. Spiritually Speaking is just a conversation. It's a conversation with our listeners. It's a conversation with people of faith who are really challenging the status quo. We're excited about the people that we've had on the show to this point. We are on the Life Coach Radio Network. I am a professional life and leadership coach, as well as a spiritual director. Rebecca is a student at Union Seminary. I'll let her talk a bit more about that in the show, and is also the children's music director at the First Presbyterian Church in the city of New York. I now find myself these days in Geneva, Illinois, and I am just so excited about tonight's show. I can't even begin to relay my excitement. I hope you hear it in my voice. We are welcoming Shamika Goddard, who is a student at Union Theological Seminary. Hi, Shamika.
Howdy, y'all.
Yay, Shamika.
I'm
going to turn it over to Rebecca. And Rebecca, if you want to introduce Shamika, and let's roll. Oh, before I do that, before I forget, this is a Blog Talk Radio show on the Life Coach Radio Network. If you want to join the conversation, please feel free to call in with your questions or your comments at any time. Our call-in number is 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. So, Rebecca, take it away.
Yeah, okay, so Jen mentioned I am a student. I'm now a new student. I've been talking for, it seems like a long time, how I'm going to be a student, but now I am a student. Union Theological Seminary in the city of New York, and yes, it has been a crazy first couple of weeks, but a good one, or a good couple of weeks. One of the best parts of being a seminarian is the people that you get to meet in this particular context. It's a beautiful world of academia / spirituality / social justice / pub night / all these amazing interactions with some of the smartest people on the planet. We get to share the halls with Cornell West. We get to have amazing speakers and beautiful worship services, but the best part of the people, I think, at Union are the students. Anytime you see a social justice situation happening at Union, it's led by students. Anytime you see a discussion going on, it's led by students. And so one of the students that just really, really stands out is Shamika Goddard. I know Shamika through a few veins. The first one, I think we first met at Not So Churchy here in New York in Brooklyn, which is the Presbyterian Welcome, which is the worship service under care of Presbyterian Waltham that meets in Brooklyn. So we met there, and then we met at St. Lydia's, which is a congregation that Jen and I talk about, I think probably almost every show, St. Lydia's comes up in some way, shape, or form, which is the dinner church in Brooklyn, run by my predecessor from First Presbyterian Church, Emily Scott. And now I get to share the Halls of Union with Shamika, and I am so thrilled and so excited about that and so honored to be a part of her academic community as well as her spiritual community. Shamika, I would love, I've said a lot, but what we want to talk to you about is what you're doing as far as your role in what you call the Minister of Technology, which I think is a beautiful title. It's probably not something that people hear very often. But you are, if I had to put a label on you, I would call you a computer nerd. To me, it's a huge compliment, so I hope you take that the same way. And if I was going to have a very expensive piece of equipment to break or to have a problem, you would be the first person that I would go to. And so I would like you to talk a little bit about your work as a minister of technology, what that means for your spirituality. But let's start where you started from. How did you come to New York? What's your faith background? Where would you like to start with that conversation?
Great. Well, so starting in the beginning means starting in San Antonio, Texas. I was born and raised there, the oldest of four kids in a single-parent home. So I grew up and learned very quickly the value of things. We did have a computer. We had a typewriter before that. And that computer and that typewriter were things that I associated with my education because I used them to write my papers and then eventually to do research for my papers on the Internet. And I also eventually would go on to help members of my family with their computers if they had issues. But I just thought it sort of helping people. I really didn't think 2 cents about it. But as a youth, I did have an opportunity to participate in the pre-freshman engineering program, which is a free summer camp that is 3 summers long. It starts at a community college in your neighborhood, and then eventually the third summer everybody goes to St. Mary's University. And that third summer, I attended one of the events they have where someone comes and talks to us about their own program. And there was a math camp that was being promoted, and I ended up applying and getting aid to go, which was in San Marcos, Texas, at what is now Texas Southern University. Now it's a different institution, but I went there to math camp for 3 summers. And so I was learning about, between the two programs over the course of 6 summers, I learned a little bit about HTML and Java and permutations and all these different kinds of both mathematical engineering science and computer science, either software like Mathematica or just different concepts. I was also, what's really important about that time, I was surrounded by people who looked like me who were counselors. So these were people who identified as Hispanic or Black, African American, and they were my counselors. They were people who were in colleges like MIT, Harvard, Stanford, and it almost didn't compute to use the term quite specifically because I didn't see anyone else like that around me. I didn't know anyone else who looked like me who was all into all of these kind of geeky things. And you know, it's extended into the TV shows that I liked and watched and all of these other things. Yeah, before geek was chic and before we had all of these kinds of role models and TV shows to look at now, I didn't see myself reflected in TV shows and movies. And so to be in these kinds of programs where they were promoting the learning and the education around math, science, basically STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, I was extremely satiated in that space intellectually. And so when I went to college, I was encouraged to apply to Stanford, and by the grace of God, I was able to go. And my math camp director encouraged me to do that. So to this day, I like to encourage people to do things they don't think they can do because I believe that God can make a way if that is his will. Mm. Or will. But while at Stanford, I actually got weeded out of my very first math class. It was an honors math class. And I might have bit off more than I could chew fresh out of math camp. I had a little bit of this math thing, you know. But being in that class, I realized that there were people who they have this sort of understanding of what college was like down. They had parents who'd been to college, or they knew people who had mentored them, or they had access to tutoring, or there was just some piece I was missing as a first generation college student. And then I did go on to graduate it. There were just pieces of the puzzle that I didn't realize I was missing. So I ended up going to the humanities side, and I graduated from that institution with a degree in the humanities. However, I still lingered on this desire to incorporate STEM somehow in my life. Even after graduating from college, I moved here to New York and served a year with AmeriCorps with Reading Partners, which is a literacy program out in Queens Village, at PS33. And at the end of that year, I was priming myself to go into Teach for America. I kind of knew that I wanted to do something with serving people, specifically direct service, and I had no idea what it was. And over the summer, I even tried to incorporate directly STEM into teaching, and I was involved in a summer camp. I was hired to do STEM, but on the first day found out that I was also teaching architecture, and I also found out on the first day that I was teaching the first through the eighth graders. So the curriculum that I had created in the weeks leading up to that time ran out probably within the first 2 days. So that was a really challenging summer, and it gave me a really bad taste in my soul for teaching. But
that'll do it to you.
It really will. Oh my God. No support, no tools. I had to bring in my own supplies. But the good that came out of that experience was it kept me in New York. I ended up making friends here. I had faith communities here. I met some really special people here who were able to show me that there's some more options in New York, and they were willing to support me during that time here. So I worked for Baked by Melissa's. I was a customer happiness associate at their corporate office. And in that time of getting a really good paycheck but not really doing what I wanted to do, I had time to really ask God, looking back on the jobs that I've had, what kind of jobs did I have which really brought me happiness or joy, kinds of things that I can sustain throughout the course of however long the Lord sees fit to have me here. And one thing that kept coming up was the notion of direct service, but then also this idea of being able to learn in whatever it is that I'm doing, because that was a really integral aspect of a lot of the jobs that I found the most joy in, whatever it was. I was a Mary Kay beauty consultant for 5 years. Though I didn't like makeup, I loved learning about products and about sales and recruiting and all these other things. So by the time I got around to meeting some of my new pastors at St. Lydia's Dinner Church, and also Not-So-Church, it was Nika Vandersall, I was asked about my own faith history and told the story of in 2006 when I decided to share a dream I believe God gave me to be a Christian author and speaker. And I wanted to tell my pastor this because I was going to go to Bible college or something like that, and I'm being Baptist. I knew I couldn't be a pastor or a preacher, but I wanted to teach people and help people have a fervor for the word in the same way that I did. But after sharing that story with the pastor, just after a sermon on dream killers, the pastor proceeded to kill my dream. And over the course of half an hour, I heard about how churches are a dog-eat-dog world. There's no market for what I want to do in San Antonio, and I cannot make one. And so I'm sitting there taking notes and just sort of allowing that dream that I had just exposed to the world and who I considered a faith authority in my life, I just let it get stomped all over. So it wasn't until years later when Emily Scott of St. Lydia's Dinner Church said, well, have you thought about that dream recently? And is there any reason why you wouldn't consider doing something about it? And it was Nika Vandersall who also watered that seed and said, well, why don't you consider seminary? I went to Union. It's a crazy place, but I love it. And I think you might love it too. Audit it off and see what you think. So I audited on my day off on Mondays, and I took Gary Dorian's class as a Christian ethicist, and I loved the class. I applied, and God saw fit to get me a space here. And when I came here, I decided that I was going to figure out what it looks like to serve people. I didn't know what kind of service. I just knew that I wanted to spend the rest of my life in service to people. And if that meant doing AmeriCorps, Peace Corps, Green Corps, Job Corps, you know, all these things for the rest of my life, I was going to do that. But by the time the third week of school ended, I had my ministry because I was helping people with their Google Drive. I was helping people figure out their calendars. I was the first to have all the information about things because my mentality is if I know something, everybody needs to be able to know something. There's no reason why this person has information and that person has information, but not everybody has it. Some of that comes from being in a four-kid family home, and the sharing is a really huge deal. And because we have a lot to share, it really didn't make sense to try and hoard anything from anybody. So I usually loved reading books. Nobody really wants to read my books, so I didn't have to worry about that. But in a general sense, if I know where all the classes are being held, then I would post something up on our Facebook page, or if I had figured out a way to get all of the readings for a particular organized by week, I shared that folder with people so that other people in that class could benefit. And it was really well received, but on the same hand, I also recognized that I was kind of feeding people fish, but I wasn't teaching them how to fish. So the I felt like there's more that could be done here. I approached the IT department, and I asked them if there was any way they could help students with some of these issues that I've been seeing. And they asked me, well, we're kind of busy with the stuff we're doing, but what's your schedule like? Because it sounds like you're already kind of doing this, and we just want to help support you in that. And so thus, the position I currently hold that I've called a computer chaplain was born, within which I ushered people through the digital space, and I have helped probably at this point over 75 different students, faculty, and staff with anything ranging from the Google Apps or the Google Suite to just issues with their devices, syncing across devices, figuring out or brainstorming just what tech solutions may be available to particular issues or problems in their office. Over the summer, I had the privilege of being a tech consultant for the Millennial Leaders Pilot Conference, which was the first conference over the summer here at Union for millennials who were interested in social justice and spirituality. I created their website as well as helped run their Facebook group and their Twitter account while the conference was going on. And now I feel like I need to figure out what this whole service through the digital space is and what that looks like. So my second year here at Union, that's exactly what I'm prepared to do.
That's awesome, Jamaica.
Jamaica, it's very, very funny because I was sitting here and I just want, you know, our listeners to know we do this remotely. So it's not as if, unfortunately, we're all sitting in the same room looking at each other. But of course I know Jamaica. We work together on Presbyterian Welcome. And the more she talked, I was like, well, of course I know Jamaica. So
I'm familiar.
Yeah,
it's a small world up here.
It is a very small Christian, techie, New York kind of progressive world. So anyway, I want to just remind folks of our call-in number. The call-in number is 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. And when you call that number, there's a little voice that will ask you if you want to be put in the queue. In order to ask a question or make a comment. So please press 1. We do have some listeners that aren't able to reach us by computer, so they listen to us through the call-in number, and that works just fine. So if you're on hold and you do want to have a question or a comment, please press the number 1 so that that indicates to me that we want to make sure that we call on you. But we appreciate all of our callers, all of our listeners. Shamika, I'm just wondering this. I love the idea of a minister of technology or a chaplain, a technology chaplain, certainly for seminary students, because I think it's an ongoing challenge, and certainly there's maybe you can help me correct about the demographics of Union, but they're more younger folks, right, than folks who are sort of mid-career going back, although I know that there are a number of folks who are sort of in my generation or even older who are there and who've gone through. But that's a real significant generation gap when you've got folks who have, you know, who are now young adults who don't ever remember their classrooms without computers, to people who are in their 50s who remember computers the size of several classrooms. There's just a real different kind of experience gap and I think comfort level with technology. Are you finding that, or do you find that it kind of cuts across generations as far as challenges with technology?
Well, what's really interesting about the gap, so there's a number of issues at play. There are people who are more familiar with technology, meaning cell phones or laptops or tablets or computers. However, everyone has issues with educational use, like learning about the apps that are available that you can use to help take notes, that when you type your notes, it'll record the lecture, and then later, if you're having issues with the notes that you type, you can click on the notes that you type, and it'll play the audio from that part of the lecture, or the website that you can go to, like Quizlet.com.
That is really cool. Like,
isn't that amazing?
I don't know that technology had been available 15 years ago when I was starting seminary.
Right. Oh, well, Shamika, I wanted to bring into that also sort of an environmental aspect in that everything we're talking about is paperless. I mean, everything. And I remember, you know, when I was an undergrad in high school having pages and pages, probably a ream of notes, you know, per semester, you know, throughout my classes. And, you know, I'm just wondering, too, how you approach the, you know, the frustration and sort of sometimes the complicated or the cumbersomeness of navigating.
So that's also a great question. So whether people are older or younger students, there's always going to be technological issues that they have within the educational space. But then also, as someone who I believe has been called to be a good steward of the earth that we live on, I have taken it upon myself to cultivate a spiritual practice of digitization in an effort to increase the awareness that I have around the paper that I do use, and then also decrease the actual amount of paper that I use. So
what would that look like? Example, if I were to come to you, Shamika, and say, okay, you know, I need help, signing up for classes. In fact, you did help me sign up for classes. And it just explained to me, you know, how, like, in that particular instance, paper may have been used in the past, and then how you would approach it as a spiritual practice to avoid paper.
Yes. And there's two or three main ways or places that you have to use paper that I'm addressing. But specifically to your question, about 2 years ago was when Union started allowing students to register for classes online. Up until then, everybody had to go through the registrar and stand in line and get their thing signed and so on. So Union is moving forward as quickly as they can, as quickly as the mind and the behaviors here can. But in terms of what can be done paperless in a smooth way, it's actually fascinating when you start thinking about whether or not you actually have to print. The question isn't, can I print this piece of paper? The ethical inquiry is, should I? So if you print everything, every reading that you have for your classes because you say, oh, I can't really read on the screen in my eyes, well, have you changed the screen resolution to have a more natural light to be better for your eyes? Have you tried a different screen? Like if your starting point is, I want to not use as much paper or I want to save money, then you're going to look for solutions to whatever obstacles you have as opposed to allowing those obstacles to give you an excuse or a reason not to move forward in the digital space. Because I can understand the digital space is scary when you don't understand it or when it's new or when you feel overwhelmed or when you feel afraid or anxious, which is where I, a computer chaplain, I come in, and with a ministry of presence, I am there. We're there together. I meet you where you are,
yeah.
And everything is okay. We move forward together when you're ready. And because of the knowledge that I have about the technical space, I can be an informed guide through that process.
Yeah.
But with readings, you can upload all of them on your Google Drive and have access to them wherever you go, on your phone or whatever device has the access to the Internet for your notes. You can take your notes in Google Drive or Evernote or a number of apps, you know, so depending on the device that you're using. Those are two main pieces, your reading, your notes, and then, of course, your papers. All of that can go on Google Drive. But then there's also little things like
I want to jump in here because we've got a caller that wants
to
come in and have a question or a comment. So, caller, say hello and welcome to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jenna Rebecca. Are you there?
Oh, is that me?
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, wow.
Hi. I didn't realize you were talking to me.
Really?
Okay. I'm actually a student at Union Seminary.
Can you say your name? Do you mind?
I'm Kristen.
Oh, hi, Kristen. Okay, great.
Okay. What I wanted to call about was actually more of a testimony slash
plug for
my friend Shamika.
Okay. That's awesome.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So besides the fact that she's, like, so amazing and has helped me through so much, like, her ability to be, you know, to help and teach and, you know, help students grow, other students grow, by using technology and showing us things that we never thought were possible, even though we grew up in such a tech-savvy age, you know, it's just amazing and wonderful. And, you know, I guess I would have to say, you know, the first time I had my appointment with her, I was trying to figure out Drive and email and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, Google Drive, yeah. Shamika, like, walked me through stuff and, you know, taught me, actually shared some of her files from Google Drive with me, so I had some notes to study from. And but the thing that was really great was showing me how to filter emails to make my inbox less crowded. I mean, you should have seen my face and how excited I got. And, you know, like just being able to organize things so you don't get messages that you don't want or, you know, that you don't need at the moment. And it's just like, you know, of course it takes a lot of follow through and, you know, keeping up with it, which, you know, I got to work on some. But, you know,
it takes practice too, doesn't it?
She's wonderful. Huh?
It takes practice. It's not something you can just learn and then go away. And also, Kristen, thank you so much for the call. That's so awesome.
Thank you.
What you bring up is really important to me as far as the way that Shamika is.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important when you're talking to people, when you're teaching somebody something new, you know, to be grace, you know, have some grace and some patience and there's very much a maternal, I think, aspect to all of this. I'm always in mind of the Saturday Night Live skit where Jimmy Fallon plays your office computer guy. a jerk to everybody, you know, and I think everybody's had that kind of experience. And I have to say, like, you know, I've had that experience only with men, but I don't want to, you know, make a sexist comment, but I do think that there's something very maternal mm-hmm. in allowing someone or in teaching, in guiding someone through the technology world. And I think speaks to that. And Shamika, can you just comment on that?
Yes. And actually, thank you, Tristan, as well for saying so. I feel like for some people, if they go and they do realize I need help with this tech thing, they might go to their children, their grandchildren, a niece or nephew, someone in their family, and they might get an experience like they don't really have time for me, or they're trying to rush me through this. There's so much I don't understand. A lot of technology today is almost like a second language. I can't just say swipe, or I can't just say press or click, because there's so much of a sort of a layer to a lot of these different pieces. So it does take time to get a person from, you know, 0 to 60. And so if you go to a professional person, then you're investing money. But even professional people have an agenda, so they might sell you things you don't need, or they might, unfortunately, take advantage of your perspective of them not being familiar with the space, which is why I do carry the theology behind my practice is a technological, systematic liberation theology, because I believe technology in itself is inherently not good or bad, but people can wield it to empower themselves or oppress. My hope is that I empower people through technology and at least give them the tools so that they can make informed decisions and better decisions. So if you do decide to print, you at least recognize that you don't have to. You have a couple of different options if you do. So that, you know, it's a spectrum, and everybody doesn't have to be on one side or the other, but just knowing where you are is helpful.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you, Kristen, for the call.
Oh, yeah, no worries. Thank you. And I definitely have to shift out of, you know, mommy help me mode whenever I'm talking to her. So,
yes,
thank you for bringing up that point, too.
That's okay. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you. That's great.
She does have a good point. A lot of the times when I'm working with whomever I may be working with, I advocate that investing in yourself technologically yields an exponential return. And it sounds kind of weird, but when you take the time to invest in yourself technologically by setting up your Gmail account, or like on Wednesday, or Tuesday and Wednesday this week at Union for the students, I'm going to be doing a tech talk every week. This week the notion is emails, you know, inbox zero, how to get Gmail to work for you. When you take that time to invest technologically, then it's going to yield an exponential return. Every time you then go to your inbox, and your inbox has a lot less emails in it, when you don't have all those really annoying emails that you totally swore you unsubscribed to, or whatever the case, when that space is a little bit better every time you go back and a little bit better, then you're going to be more comfortable in that space. You're going to want to go to that space. And it makes such a huge difference when the digital spaces that you operate in are customized by you. They have your sort of fingerprint, and you are familiar in them.
I think, Shamika, this really does go so far beyond just students. I mean, I'm a life and leadership coach. I work a lot with clergy. Who, you know, their time is very valuable. They're trying to, you know, be as attentive as they can to their congregation. And especially when you're in a larger church setting, email, I know, can just be really feel overwhelming. And it feels urgent. Like, you know, if it's sitting there and I'm not responding fast enough, then there's, you know, because our perceptions of what's a reasonable response time have really shifted and changed.
So now
we expect that if I email somebody at 10 o'clock at night, I'm probably going to get a response from them by 9 o'clock the next morning. Now, that's not necessarily healthy, and I know that one of the things that I work on across the board with all of my clients are boundaries and healthy boundaries, and how do you, and email is a big issue, and it impinges. It's like people can draw really good boundaries on everywhere except their email.
Mm-hmm. That's, because just like where, you know, we went from snail mail to fax machines to emails, which all every step of the way expedited the expectancy for a response. But I point to the fact that what I do is a ministry, because there is a lot of room there for spiritual practices or spiritual mindsets to take hold. So if you think about the boundaries that, you know, in the book of Genesis, God took 6 days to create and took the seventh day to rest. In the Jewish faith, I know of several people who, for Shabbat, they are offline, and they have it in their little email signature to let people know, hey, if I don't respond, here's why. And there's more and more people who are recognizing that the digital space is just like the analog space, meaning real life, you know, virtual life. And if you, for yourself, say, when I get home at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock and I'm not on the clock, then I'm not checking my email. And people can wait till the next day. It is that decision and that expectancy that you then teach people who are emailing you, so that people know, oh, I know Lucy. When I email her, she's not going to get back to me until such and so a time. And it may take time with every relationship that you're with, but that expectancy starts with you. And Oprah has said, you teach people how to treat you. So in the digital space, it starts with you.
Absolutely.
The other piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The piece with email specifically is that at this point, most people have an inbox that is cray-cray. Like, you might have thousands of emails in your inbox, or you have hundreds, or maybe you have 25 different, you know, folders along the side, and it's just sort of unmanageable. And so you just sort of do what you can and get out of there as fast as you can. But it doesn't necessarily have to remain that way. And one of the things that I'm hoping to do with as many students and whomever wants to take advantage as possible is to give people the tools to start over, to do a redo, to hit the start button, hit their inbox, and it's a two-step process. You got to work with what's already there, so the past up to today. And then the second step is, what do you do when the new emails come in? Now that you got it all cleaned up, it's kind of like those clean house shows that come in, they clean everything, new paint on the wall. When they leave, how are you going to keep it that way? So that's where the behavior and the mentality comes in. That's where filters are really effective. And then using the tools of Gmail to make the inbox do work so that you don't have to. By the time you get there, it's already sorted some things for you, et cetera.
I need you in my life, sister.
Yeah, right. She's amazing.
I'm here to say.
What's so great about that, too, and you touched on this, but I'm a big advocate for mental health and for seeking, you know, therapy if one needs it, or, you know, 12-step groups, whatever makes people feel good. And I really think that, like what you said about, you know, this being, I mean, it clears headspace. I mean, it, like I watched people sit down at a computer, and I've been there too, sitting on a computer and just lose their mind because they can't, you know, they can't figure out how to do something, or they, you know. And there was a time when you could, like, you know, accidentally click on a pop-up and then your computer was overrun with viruses.
True.
I don't know. I you know, and so I think there's a lot of stress around stuff like that.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Rebecca. People are to the point where, you know, they've heard so much, and there have been, you know, security breaches and confidentiality breaches, where people are really afraid to just get in, sit down on their computer, and start clicking on things. Now, of course, you don't want to ever click on something that says buy now, or, you know, put in your credit card number to something that you're not sure what it is that you're looking at. But by the same token, it's like, how do you will never get comfortable with the technology, in my mind, unless you're willing to sit down and just play and try and figure it out and click on things. I tell people all the time, just go ahead. It will not bite. You just go ahead and click, you know, poke around in there, see what works. see what where the links take you. But yeah, I mean, I think it's very intimidating for a lot. And what the other thing that we have to realize too is you guys are both in seminary. You're being, you know, trained to be in ministry in the world, and the U.S. population of Christians, for the most part, are older.
Yes.
And they don't use technology in the same way that people who are millennials or younger do.
Right.
So it's like, how do you sort of bring this in as a spiritual practice and help folks to feel more comfortable with technology when so many of our folks are, you know, over 60 or over 70?
And a lot of churches don't
Before we go into Rebecca, I just want to remind folks of the call-in number. We have about 20 minutes left in our conversation. So please feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. You're listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. So go, Rebecca.
Sorry, I was just going to say, a lot of churches are not using technology, you know, in a productive way. Shamika, I'm wondering if you can tell us, you told me the story, and it moved me, but about the church that you attended, was it this past Sunday or the Sunday before?
Oh, yes. Yes. So when you are looking for a new church, most people will ask for a referral or they'll ask people they know. What's the next thing you do? You Google it. If you don't know people who go to church and you want to go to church, you Google it. If you cannot find that church online, or if you find the church's website and it looks like it was made in the 1990s, or if it's not its own website, if it's like a Yellow Pages link and it's like the number doesn't even work anymore, then how can I build trust and faith in that church? I'm not going to go to that church. I was physically in a church service called the Rock Church. It was on 36th and Broadway. I get there. I tell you, it was an amazing service. It was on and popping. People was praising Jesus, and I was all about it. I'm tweeting. Mm-hmm. I'm Facebooking. I'm also searching furiously for their website because the website is going to tell me what they believe, what the denomination is, how long they've been a church, if it's a good one. Because I could not find the website, I suddenly became panicked. Even though I was physically there, I didn't believe it. What are these people trying to sell me? What's going to happen? Are they going to start, like, I'm suddenly panicking in the side of this church because I couldn't find their website. And, like, maybe not even 5 years ago that wouldn't have been a thing. But the way that the presence of the Internet has changed the validity and the authorization of certain people's realities or presence or actualization, which is something I'm looking forward to exploring in a PhD program, this notion of techno-ethics. You know, what does it mean to exist in our day and age? If you don't have a LinkedIn page, you might not exist as a professional or, you know, et cetera. So for churches, you know, if you don't have at least a Facebook page that says your time, your who you are, your name, your pastor, something, sends a message to people that says you didn't take the time to put that information out. So you're not looking to give that information out, period.
That's really interesting because I don't think that people realize, older people, and I'm speaking because I'm significantly older than the two of you, but that, you know, it's equivalent to what a steeple or a sign out front your church was 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 40 years ago. If you do not have a presence on the web, you don't have a front door, you don't have a sign, you don't have a steeple. People can't find you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's interesting. I still have conversations. There's been a conversation in a church that I know about that they need a steeple. No, they need a better web page. Really interesting. They don't need a steeple. They need a better web page. Because, again, you're not trying. You're not serious about welcoming new people if your web presence isn't really where it needs to be.
It's yeah. all about stretching boundaries, right? I mean, it's about stretching ourselves spiritually, you know, and if we're not willing to get comfortable online, then how are we going to get comfortable with, you know, I mean, you said it, Shemika, the website tells people what the church believes, what they're about. You know, are they open and affirming? You know, do they have, how much, you know, when do their services meet?
Yes.
Do they meet on Wednesday nights? Do they have a homeless shelter?
All of those things. They're all so incredibly important for the person who's looking for a faith community, but also more and more churches are realizing the digital space is such a lucrative space for the people who already go to their church. So there's churches who, like the UCC, they have a church in the game Second Life. So if you're a character in this massive multiple online player game, then you can go to church, the UCC church, in this game. There's also churches who have apps, the UCC again. They have a lighting of the candle, which is integral to their prayer process. Their app has a candle that you can light and blow out. The list goes on. There was a group of students who just recently created an app for the Apple that's going to Android soon called Get Pray, where you go on there and you can create a prayer. You can change the background of people. Instead of liking it, they can join it. And their hope is every religion across the world prays, even though we're arguing and fighting and all of these things. So their hope is if we can start praying together, we can start moving forward together and doing good together. So there is extremely high possibility in the digital space for good, but if places like left, progressive, inclusive, open, affirming communities aren't on the or in the digital space, or if they don't have as much presence as a different kind of message, ATLA, for example, which is, for those who don't know, it's a Harlem church who had some really unnecessarily offensive messages on their church sign. They got a lot of press recently. They have a website. They have a YouTube channel. They've got a blog. And I tell you, they also have a lot of money coming in from that. It's also something like the Mormon Church, as well as the Seventh-day Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and then also the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Both of those churches have gone over a rebranding in the last couple of years, where Mormons used to knock on doors and Seventh-day Adventists used to pass out pamphlets, which they still do. They also have a space on Facebook where they can give you some information, or they can send you to some links with a YouTube channel where you can watch. And you know what that says to me? That you want me to learn about your faith. You want me to learn about the history of your denomination. You want me to learn about what you believe. And I can take my own time to do so. And so that when I'm ready, I can go to your website and I can reach out to someone and chat with someone and pray with them about joining your denomination. So if that's, I almost thought, you know, the Mormons are really nice. They have those billboards. Because it was so inviting, so welcoming, so hospitable. And that's something that the church is losing. We have these beautiful big buildings that are empty often, Sunday after Sunday, or they're getting emptier. And I'm not saying that the Internet is going to save everything or change, you know, the world, but it is a tool. And like I said before, it can be used to oppress people or it can be used to liberate people. And I feel like some people are using it to liberate their parishioners, their believers, their peers, and whatever the space is. And that's what I'm hoping to do, is encourage people to do just that.
And you said this before, too, just briefly. You mentioned finances, and churches are, I'm seeing a couple of churches now who are having options to digitally donate instead of putting a physical dollar in the offering plate, if you will.
Yes, that's a great point. I've actually started this practice because I visit different churches but quite often. If I, during the tithe and offering time, when you sing in the song, I will go to your website, and I will look for the tithe button, and I will fill out all the information. And if I can hit send or pay by the time y'all finish collecting the baskets, then y'all will get my tithe. Now, I still get after the service. Yeah. But what it tells me is this system built for the liturgy of the space, or is it for people to come back? Who's going to come back? Who's going to remember or write down the link or bookmark it or email it to themselves or whatever and then go back after service right? So what you want to do is make it easy, just like in sales when I was back in Mary Kay. You want to make it easy for people to buy from you, right? You don't want to constantly be selling stuff. You want to make it easier for people to buy. So there's a faith community that Rebecca and I belong to, Not So Churchy. So when you come in, you can get your name tag, right? And there's also an iPad, which has a Square extension. So I can run my card. I can pay whatever I'd like for tithe and offering, and I go about my business. And that's how they collect their tithe and offering. There's other faith communities that have like a little kiosk kind of machine. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit more investment, but it's the same kind of concept. But what makes sense, you could have a smartphone and a little extension for a Square account. And a Square is a company that allows you to run a credit or a debit card from your smartphone, from your iPad, from your tablet, and then charge that card on the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, more and more as we move forward in looking at how, you know, how do people transact? You know, it's not in cash, or it's less and less in cash and checks, and more in credit cards and Google Wallet. And before we end, I do want to get a little conversation around the Time Magazine article, but we only have about 10 minutes left, a little less than 10 minutes. I want to remind people of our call-in number. It's 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. Remember to hit number one so that I know that you're interested in or you have a question or a comment. So I thought it was interesting. The cover of Time Magazine had a picture of almost an implant or a look at that the our technology is becoming, and they talk about this in the article that it's becoming more personal. And really with the I thought it was fascinating. They really look at with the the Apple Watch. It's not the iWatch, it's the Apple Watch. They rather than sort of creating technology new, what Apple does is it sort of is like they're the grave diggers. They go out and they look at technology that has not fared well. And so once they look at it and they take, they see what do we need to, what would it take to make this really work? You know, nobody really had smartphones. I mean, some of us did. A lot of, professionals carried BlackBerries, but the smartphone didn't really come into widespread use until there was an iPhone. It's like, they made it sexy. They made it usable. They made it something that you really wanted. And the same thing with what, they're calling the wearable technology, the Fitbits, the Nike Fuel, the, and I get some of the wearable technology, but I want the Apple Watch, and it's not even out yet. And I'm getting ready to get my iPhone 6 because I am an Apple integrated technology. Everything talks to everything else. I don't have to download pictures. They automatically download through the cloud, and I am completely comfortable with that. And so the question then becomes, are people really ready for this level of intimacy with technology? So I think I'm ready for it. I'm quite clear that you're ready for it, Shamika. I'm interested to see what your feeling is on where you see this going and with the folks that you work with. And particularly, how are Christians going to respond to sort of this level of technological intimacy, if you will?
Yes. Well, I would say two things from the Christian perspective. One is from the great poet King Solomon, who says there's nothing new under the sun, right? So this is something that Apple is really taking advantage of. There have been wearables for a while now. There have been watches that give you all kinds of information for a while now, but they're really making them their own. And they are, as you said, making them sexy and whatnot. So people want to actually take advantage of them and invest in them and rearrange their lives around them. And then the second piece is really overall with technology and Christianity. I'm writing my thesis about sort of the systematic theology of technology using science fiction as one of my sources, because I believe science fiction begets science fact, and a lot of sci-fi movies or books, they really explore what might happen when the robots take over or what might happen if X, Y, or Z. With technology, we're starting to see the future now, and I feel like a lot of people, I'm going to just put myself out there, I sleep with my phone next to me. It is my alarm clock. It is my mirror. It is my best friend, you know, sometimes, and I'm already quite intimate with it. And there's other, you know, little small things that, like, if you leave your house without your cell phone, you kind of feel like you're not wearing pants. Like, you're 3 miles away from work. You will go back home sometimes to get your phone. The level of intimacy that we already have, the relationship that we already have with these objects. I mean, I'm talking to my phone right now. I'm cradling it in my hand. If it were to fall, I would hurt myself to catch it, okay? The cracked screen is not cute. So when more and more technology becomes wearable, which read soon insertable, these are things that are going to happen. When they happen, there's always going to be two sides to the coin. It's going to be a utopian or a dystopian response. The utopian being, this is going to make our lives better. This is going to change things for the better. Humans are going to move forward. Then there's going to be the dystopian aspect of, this is when we can mark the beginning of the end. This is where we can know humanity started to take a turn. That was the same thing was said for the telephone, the radio, writing. Socrates, someone like him, thought when people started writing things down, it would be the end of intellect because people weren't remembering anything. They were just writing them down. So at every turn, as humanity has moved forward, there's always been this push-pull. But I feel like for Christians who believe that in the end times, God will come back, God will call his and her people up, that technology is going to so technology may play a role in our lives, but does it play a role in our afterlives? There are people who are scientists, who are technologists and futurists who believe in something called singularity, which is the human in its highest form, which means your human self, your conscience, is uploaded to a computer and lives there for eternity, and that is the human in its perfect form, and that is a form of eschatology or the end time. And for people who believe that the human and the computer together are the ideal form of humanity, then for them, yes, we are quite forward. We are quite moving forward and in the right direction. So I think things are going to get really interesting. But what's going to be unfortunate is people who aren't even talking about this conversation, who are putting their heads in the sand, who are insisting, oh, I'm just a dinosaur, I have a flip phone, don't give me anything unless it has pen and paper. Like, those people are going to get further and further behind in the conversation and won't even be able to understand the language. And then when something does happen, then they're going to continue to just get left out, not only of the conversation, but out of society. That's eventually going to be happening. So.
Wow. That's all very powerful. And it's really something to be thinking about. And, you know, how do we interact with this growing level of intimacy, the kind of growing miniaturization of our technology? I mean, I find it incredibly fascinating, even reading the article today in Time about what will indeed be available on the Apple Watch, and how in the ways which I know we we've mentioned on the phone or on the show before that we've just recently moved, and I was without cable and internet for a week and a half. I mean, I felt like my left arm had been chopped off. It's like I still had my technology, but it wasn't connected to anything. And in order for me to really do my work, I needed to leave the house, go and find a place where I could connect to the internet. So this has been a fascinating conversation. I hate to say that the hour is up, but the hour is up. And Shamika, I know I just want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. I'd love to continue this conversation. If you could quickly let people know how that they can connect with you if they want to, you know, ask you any further questions. Of course, they can do that by going to our Facebook page, which is
right.
Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. Please go on Facebook, like our page, and have a conversation about the things that you've heard tonight. Is there a way, another way that people could reach you or follow you on Twitter? Whatever works best for you, Shamika?
Definitely. So my Twitter handle is at Shamika LaShawn. That's my first name, S-H-A-M-I-K-A. My middle name, LaShawn. So at Shamika LaShawn. I also have a new blog out called Computer Chaplaincy. .blogspot.com. So that's one way to just sort of continue to have this conversation with me as I work with different individuals as well as take a look at what's going on in the world. Technologically speaking, so that's computerchaplaincy.blogspot.com. And feel free to email me. I actually love having the conversation as well as helping people. If people want help now, I'm still a student. But if you're outside of the union community and you're looking for help, and you will be willing to wait until May 15th of 2015 when my ministry officially starts, then feel free to email me. That'll be at Shamika LaShawn, S-H-A-M-I-K-A-L-A-S-H-A-W-N at gmail.com.
Awesome.
Yay.
And Rebecca, do you have any last words before we sign off?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to Shamika. Anybody that has any questions about Union Seminary, if anybody's interested in going to school there or wants to come and visit or wants to know more about going to seminary in New York, I love answering questions like that. And also, if you are in New York and want to come worship at First Pres, I'm downtown every Sunday morning.
Excellent.
Awesome.
I'm Reverend Jennifer Kotler. I'm a life and leadership coach, as we've discussed, and I'm really happy to be on the air, and we look forward to being back on September the 29th at 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll be having conversations just like we had tonight. So thank you so much, Shamika. Just Twitter, you can follow me at Coach Rev Jen. And also for Rebecca, you can reach her at A New Rebecca. And we would really love to interact with you on our Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca Facebook page. So please like us, please join us, and please listen again. Thank you all so much. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to having you with us in a future show. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.